Good morning,
Good
sir.
morning,
And are
Mr.
you Mr.
Bramble.
Rogers?
I'm Mr. Bramble for the appellant.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, you're Mr. Bramble. Very good. And Mr. Rogers here today? Very good. And Ms. James, you are here also. Who is going to argue for you? Mr. Rogers, very good. Do any counsel have any questions before we begin? Mr. Bramblett, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Benjamin Bramblett arguing for the appellant. This is a case about accountability. More specifically, it is a case that stands for the notion that no person or entity is above the law. The department has attempted to argue that it is not accountable to the court, but even if it were, it is not held to the same standard as individuals who willfully violate a court order. Despite this fallacious line of argument, the fact remains that the purpose of a contempt action nonetheless applies to the department just as much as it would any other person or entity. The department willfully violated a court order. That is uncontested. Despite this concession, the department is still maintaining the position that unlike other persons or entities that find themselves in contempt, compliance with the purge plan is unnecessary. Purge plan called for a $5,000 fine and for the department to implement new procedures specifically designed to prevent the initial violation from happening again.
Before we get too deeply into this, Mr. Bramblett, one of the issues that I think raised is whether or not you have standing. Can you address that for us?
Absolutely. The department has remained fixated on the fact that guardian ad litem does not have standing to bring this claim. I can understand that in one of two ways. First interpretation is that because the guardian ad litem was not personally harmed, there is no injury. Obviously, that is absurd. I don't think that was the underlying argument.
Wait a minute. Why is that absurd?
Just because, I'm in the sense of physical or like some sort of actual physical harm experienced by the guardian ad litem personally, as opposed to her interest in looking for the best interests of the child and her ability to do that being affected by the.
So how was your client harmed?
My client was harmed in the sense that she has an ongoing obligation to look after the best interest of the child. When the department willfully violates a court order, that limits her ability to do that. So the only remedy afforded to the guardian ad litem is to bring a contempt action to require the department to comply with the court order. And I would argue that the fact
you
that
you didn't appeal from the original contempt order, did you?
Did not. The appeal stems from the court extinguishing the contempt because of a fine and without any good faith effort to actually implement the underlying procedure, which allowed for the harm to occur.
Doesn't in any sort of purge plan, doesn't the contemnor MP perhaps hold the keys to the jail cell, so to speak? Hasn't our case law talked about they have a choice? They can either suffer the sanction or perform the purge plan. Isn't that what our jurisprudence says in contempt cases?
That is precisely what our jurisprudence says in contempt cases.
And so isn't that what the department did?
No, I would argue they did not. They willfully disregarded any notion of actually making a good faith effort to address the problem. And their position is that we can just remit fines. And the issue with that is to liken it to a contempt action, like for instance, child support or even a refusal of a spouse in a divorce proceeding. If I refuse to pay child support, I have an option. I can either maintain my past due amounts and could catch up on my arrearage, or I can go to jail. When I get out of jail, I don't get credit for my underlying obligation. The debt nonetheless remains. And if I don't fix that, if I don't get caught up, I'm again going to be remanded to jail. Here,
in your example, though, isn't there a second contempt action?
I'm sorry?
In your example you give about the child support, isn't there a second contempt action sought?
In the sense of,
well, the court gives them an option. You can do A or B, and they choose B. You wanted them to do A, but they did B. To go after that again, don't you file another contempt action?
I would say they, I mean, they just never purged themselves of the contempt.
Well, the court gave them an option, didn't they? They said you can do this or this. Do you agree with that?
That is correct.
And they chose the option that you disagree with, but they chose an option that was presented to them, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
In the child support example, if you take someone who no longer has a continuing obligation, but their entire child support obligation is past due, and someone is committed to jail until they pay the support obligation. And if they only pay part of it, is there an opportunity to hold them in contempt again once they're released?
So my understanding with a purge plan related to that is if they do not comply, they do not purge themselves of contempt. So yes, if they were to somehow purge themselves of the contempt and they were to fall behind again, then yes, it would require another contempt action. But there is at least a steadfast effort on the part of the payor to actually pay. Here, there's no underlying effort to actually address this problem, and they nonetheless remain in contempt, irrespective of what the court's order failed to properly address in sense of and or language.
Well, didn't they fire the
Absolutely.
The person who actually did this?
Yes, but that unfortunately is not a remedy. Merely relying on the ability to terminate someone after a violation nonetheless creates an environment where that violation can readily occur. It could happen yesterday, it could happen tomorrow, it could be happening right now. The only safeguard at this point is, hey, if they do that, they're going to be terminated. And that's just not an adequate response.
What relief are you asking this court to enter?
I believe that the purge plan should be reinstated, and that the department has an ongoing obligation to purge itself of the contempt. And as it stands right now, they are still in contempt of court, irrespective of what the our argument is, that despite the courts holding otherwise, that they are nonetheless still in contempt.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller Lerman here. So am I right in understanding that the thrust of your argument is they can't buy their way out of this, and they need to go write some rules? And if that's the basis of the argument, did the juvenile court have the authority to direct the kind of rules it seeks?
Yeah, absolutely. In 2015, this court held that they do. We're not asking for a regulation. We're not asking for a statutory change. We're merely asking for the exact relief that it has been held by this court to be acceptable. I believe the specific terminology was the policies related to the internal management of the agency, which has been upheld as of 2015 as within the power of the court to enforce.
The purge plan language now is asking, you're saying is supported by our prior opinions, but it's directing them to draft policies, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
For not just specifically to this case, but in general, that would apply to all cases.
That is correct.
Does the court have the power to direct the executive branch to draft specific policies?
It is not. What we're asking is not a rule or regulation as defined by Nebraska statute. So yes, they do have the authority to do that, and this court has held that they do. This is merely a rule related to the internal management of the agency. The court does have the power to issue orders with respect to juvenile cases and adjudications. And as it stands, if the department is not able to accomplish that, then the court can implement rules to allow them to.
And that can apply system. They can order policies that apply system wide, not specifically to the case before them. The court has that authority.
Yes, I believe they have that authority.
Well, in this case, the judge decided that the department fulfilled its obligation. So what is our review of that?
I would state that, that's unacceptable. The department is not allowed to just merely, or they should not be allowed to merely expend treasury funds to subsidize
it was acceptable to the judge. It's apparently not acceptable to you. But what difference should that make to us?
The difference is the department's still in contempt, and unlike an individual.
The judge has already said the department is not in contempt.
That was an incorrect application of law. They are nonetheless in contempt. The underlying harm can happen right now. It can happen tomorrow. It can happen a week from now. There's no safeguard to prevent it.
They were found to be in contempt. They were sanctioned for that contempt, and a purge plan was made as part, as an alternative to the sanction, correct? The sanction was paid, and all you've appealed from is an order acknowledging the payment of the sanction, correct?
That's correct.
What action did that order take other than serve as a receipt for the payment of the sanction imposed? I'm struggling
basically
with any action.
Apologies for interrupting you. The order held or holds that they're no longer in contempt and that they're free to essentially do this again, and all they have to do is remit a check from the state treasury funds.
The order finds that the sentence imposed or the sanction imposed has been satisfied. Is that untrue?
That's what the order says.
Is it untrue?
I do not feel it has been satisfied. They paid the fine, but they're nonetheless still in contempt. The underlying harm, I can't argue here for how the order should have been written. I do feel it should be remanded to be readdressed, but in any
Shouldn't
event,
you have appealed that from the time that the order was written.
I don't think there was an understanding at that time that if they just merely showed up and paid 5,000, it would be dismissed. I thought it would be a situation. It was understood, at least from our perspective, that they would have to purge themselves. It was a fine, and you actually have to purge yourselves of contempt. The fine is the sanction. However, they are still in contempt, and another fine could be reimposed for failing to create those procedural safeguards.
You say
I beg your pardon. Oh.
You say they're still in contempt, but the original contempt was for a visitation issue. The judge found that they improperly granted visitation to a grandparent. That was the court order that was violated, and that was the contempt. They're not doing that now. So how is their continuing contempt ongoing? They had the action, the violation of the court order, gave visitation when I wasn't supposed to, found it be contempt of that order, judge sentenced them to either pay $5,000 or do these 3 or 4 different things. So how are they continuing in contempt if they're not continuing with additional visitation?
Because there's nothing, there's absolutely no safeguard or nothing to prevent it from happening again.
Well, then there's another contempt. If it happens again, don't you bring a new contempt and say, now you've done it again, so now you're also in contempt of the court order?
I beg your pardon, and I'm sorry to jump in here before your answer, but I think following up on Justice Funk's line of questions, if this case may have gone moot with the payment of the money, but nevertheless, you seek some system-wide, let's call it guidelines, for which you believe a court has the power, is that a public policy question that you would seek for this court to speak to?
Absolutely not. My position is that it is absolutely not moot. This is 100% capable of repetition. And if it's not addressed by this court, it is certainly capable of evading review, which I believe is the precise definition of right. So I would argue this is not a moot issue at all. And unless this court intervenes, the situation essentially is the department may disregard any court orders in the juvenile court, and the only remedy is we'll spend treasury funds. So essentially, they can subsidize their own incompetence with treasury funds. The actual director, none of the administrators are cutting a check from their personal checking account.
How do you address the issue that contempt should be rarely used? Wouldn't contempt be available for the slightest thing that anybody did wrong in a very complex system involving very complex cases? With lots of children, aren't you arguing for some precedent that the department would be held in contempt day after day after day?
I I do not feel that is what I'm arguing. I merely feel that specifically with this set of facts, this scenario can repeat itself.
Why would this set of facts ever be available for contempt on one of our juvenile court judges?
Because the juvenile court judge ordered that the visitation may not occur. The department is bound by that order, and they refused, for whatever reason, to follow it.
I'd like to ask you a slightly different question that perhaps I haven't seen a focus on in the briefing, and that is the separate juvenile court is a statutorily created court of special and limited jurisdiction, correct?
That's correct.
And it is not a court of equity, right?
Also correct.
Consequently, it seems to me as I'm listening that the relief that you were seeking to begin with to apply to cases across the board and to implement policy relief is the kind of relief that would be addressed to a court in equity. Am I missing something here?
I mean, it would certainly amount to, I guess, some form of injunctive relief in the sense that they are required to do something, but.
And separate juvenile courts don't have that authority, do they?
I mean, again, in reinterest of Zachary D, 2015 says that they do.
Well, was that case decided wrongly?
Absolutely not. And this set of facts falls directly within that internal management of the agency. It's not a regulation, it's not a rule. The court has authority to enact it. The court erred by holding that they were no longer in contempt.
So what statute can you point me to that gives the separate juvenile court the authority to give the relief that you are in effect seeking?
I don't have like a statutory authority for that power. I believe it's a common law. It's a byproduct of the common law. If you violate a court order, you can be held in contempt. And I believe that is obviously incorporated into statutory law here in Nebraska.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. James, good morning to you.
Chief Justice, Your Honors. I am Jerry James. I represent the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. And this morning, we are going to have our senior certified law student, Trevor Rogers, argue this case for us. Thank you.
Mr. Rogers, good morning to you. You may start by removing your mask.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Trevor Rogers, and I'm a senior certified law student representing the appellee, the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. Now, there are three ways in which this court can rule in favor of the department in this case. First, this court can hold that the department was perfectly within its right to satisfy the sentencing order through payment of a fine. Second, this court can find that this case is moot because the appellant was remedied by the imposed sanction and the appellant could have appealed the terms of the sentencing order. And third, this court can hold that the appellant lacks standing because the department's compliance with the imposed sanction did not injure the appellant. And for these reasons, the department respectfully requests that this court affirm the judgment of the separate juvenile court of Douglas County. Now, if I could begin with three arguments in response to opposing counsel. Opposing counsel argues that this case is about accountability, but accountability isn't an issue here. The department was held in contempt, and the department did comply with the sentence imposed on it as a result of being in contempt. Second, the Chief Justice pointed out that the appellant did not appeal the sentencing order. That's a key in this case. If the appellant had an issue with the terms of the sentencing order, then they should have appealed that, but they didn't. And third, Justice Frydenberg pointed out what should happen is that if the appellant wants the purge plan to be reinstated, another contempt action should be filed. The solution for the appellant in this case is to go before the juvenile court, move it to issue a show cause order, and get the process started if they really feel that the department should be held in contempt again.
Counsel, you heard my questions of opposing counsel with respect to courts of equity and the status of the seventh juvenile court. Do you have a view on the questions that I asked?
Admittedly, Your Honor, because that issue isn't briefed, I don't have a full opinion I could give you. I'm happy to provide a supplemental brief if the court would request it on that issue.
Let me ask you a similar sort of question. Did we go in the ditch when I wrote Zachary? And is there a way to distinguish Zachary by this court? Or should we, do we need to overturn Zachary in some way?
I'd have 2 points on Zachary D. First off, I think the issue that the department raised in Zachary D was whether the specific policies issued in that case violated the separation of powers doctrine. I think as it applies, Zachary D applies to any subsequent case, the devil's always going to be in the details. It depends on the details of that purge plan. I think what this court held in Zachary D was that those policies were specific and narrow. They were tailored really to the parties in that case. That differs from the policies in this case. And we raise that in our separation of powers argument. These policies go well beyond the parties at issue and perhaps even beyond the Division of Children and Family Services in this case. But I think another point about Zachary D is that this order, outside of the substance of the purge plan, is nearly identical. And no one batted an eye to the fact that you can impose a sanction on the department, you can issue a purge plan, and from that, the department can satisfy that order by just complying with the sanction. I'd like to begin with sort of the merits of the department's contention in this case. The appellant in this case misunderstands the law of civil contempt. All contempt proceedings, whether they are criminal or civil, begin with one thing, a sentence, or what's more commonly called in civil contempt proceedings, a sanction. And in Braun versus Braun, this court stated that a civil contempt sanction must be two things. It must be coercive and it must be remedial. And the fact that a sanction is remedial means that it serves as a remedy to the party harmed by the contemptuous action. And this court's civil contempt jurisprudence has long held that in order for a civil contempt sanction to maintain its civil status, it must be accompanied by a purge plan. And in Braun, this court stated that purge plans are designed to permit the contemner to avoid the imposition of the sanction. This is exactly what this court means when it says that civil contemners hold the key to their own jail cell. This framework means one thing. It means that civil contemners are not mandated to follow purge plans when a sentencing order is issued. Civil contemners have complete discretion as to how to satisfy the sentencing order by complying either with the sanction or by the purge plan imposed. And this framework permits the action that the department took in this case. The department simply chose to comply with the sanction instead of the purge plan, which was perfectly within its right to do.
You did not appeal the original purge plan order. Does that affect this case at all?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think if we were to appeal it, what we'd be appealing is we'd have to appeal the order as a whole, essentially. We have discretion. All civil contemners have discretion as to how they want to satisfy that order. I don't think it forces them, if they don't like one of the options, to file an appeal. There's just simply no need to go through that process. You can comply with the sanction and move on. Now, the appellant at pages 5 and 6 of its brief argues that contemners are subject to the requirements of a purge plan. And if those requirements are not met, then a contemner must satisfy the imposed sanction. But that's incorrect. Contemners are at all times subject to the terms of the imposed sanction. The purge plan serves simply to give a civil contemner a pathway to avoid the consequences of the sanction, and it does not create any binding legal obligations on the contemner unless the contemner chooses to purge itself through the purge plan. Now, furthermore, the plain language of the sentencing order permitted the department to satisfy the order through paying the fine. T32 in the transcript.
Take any other steps other than paying the sanction to correct the underlying issues that led the contempt in the first place?
We removed the caseworker. I believe the record reflects that. That's really what the issue is here. We had a rogue caseworker, and the appellant admits in their brief that this is a rogue caseworker. We removed that caseworker. We have new people in place. The record doesn't reflect anything that there's any sort of impending or possible harm that could be a cause upon the appellant by the new workers in place. I think that combined with complying with the sanction is what we've done here.
Does the record tell us anything about what was so terrible about this kid visiting the grandmother to begin with?
Admittedly, Your Honor, the record isn't remarkably clear about what it is that the department did that led to it being found in contempt. As I understand it, one of the department's caseworkers permitted one of the children involved in this case to have visitation with someone that they weren't supposed to. The parties in this case have a whole host of appeals. There's been appeals in this court, appeals in the Court of Appeals on whether certain parties have, what's their classification to these children. It's a fairly complex case, but all in all, the caseworker permitted one of these children to have visitation with someone that they weren't supposed to.
Do we have in our record the order that was previously entered by the juvenile court upon which the appellant here sought to have the department held in contempt?
I don't believe that the transcript reflects that, Your Honor. I'm not sure specifically what order it was. It's not there in the record, to my knowledge.
And so, as far as we know, no one appealed from whatever order that was, but we don't know what the content of that order was.
I believe as the record is created, that would be correct. Now, T32 in the transcript explicitly says, quote, the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services is ordered to pay a fine of $5,000, end quote. And the next paragraph says that the department may purge the contempt by adopting a pair of policies. And this order fits in perfectly with how civil contempt works. The mandatory language of the first paragraph means that the department is subject to the imposed sanction. And the permissive language of may in the second paragraph means that the department has the option to choose to satisfy the order by adopting the policies, but it is not mandated to. Now, to the extent that this court finds any ambiguity in that order, I would urge this court to look at the actions of the juvenile court in this case. I think the record is clear that the juvenile court said that the department satisfied the order. No one would know better than the juvenile court judge as to the meaning of the order that she was trying to issue. I think it's clear on its face, but to the degree that this court finds any ambiguity, I would urge it to look at the actions of the juvenile court.
So is the sanction too low? Should it have been $1 million fine or 50 to 30 days in jail? Is that our problem?
I'd have two responses to that, Your Honor. I don't think that this sanction is not enough. This is $5,000 in a single case for a single action.
Paid by who?
Admittedly, it is paid by the public. The department is a public entity.
So how is the department sanctioned?
Well, the department is sanctioned because it is ultimately the one that has to pay the fine. Now, that fine does come from public money, but everything the department does, public money. No matter what, it's always public money involved with the department.
Can you hold the department in contempt, or do you have to hold individuals in contempt?
I believe courts can hold the department in contempt. I think this court's jurisprudence hasn't. If that was an issue, I think this would have been addressed by this court a long time ago. In Zachary D., a juvenile court held us in contempt. There's other cases in the past. I think if that, if I don't think that that's an issue in this case. Your Honors, I see that I'm out of time. The department respectfully requests that this court affirm the judgment of the Separate Juvenile Court of Douglas County. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? Thank you, counsel. That concludes arguments in In Re Interest of Artemis G. Court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Dietzel Enterprises versus J.A. Weber Construction. I'll pronounce that Weber Construction. If I'm mispronouncing it, counsel, you're going to have to let me know that. I apologize for that.